Into the Fold is part of the Texas Podcast Network, the conversations changing the world. Brought to you by the University of Texas at Austin, the opinions expressed in this podcast represent the views of the hosts and guests and not of the University of Texas at Austin.
It is so real to me, not just a living, breathing baby that is going to be a hopefully thriving, happy, healthy adult. With lots of healthy relationships and, you know, success in her own way. And so that makes it very real for me. And it makes me even think about how hard it is to parent, to be a caregiver, and not only in this time, but at any time. And that there needs to be even more resources and support for families who have young children.
Hi, welcome to Into the Fold, the mental health podcast. I am your host, Ike Evans, and today we're delighted to bring you episode 119, Children in 2021, the first 3 years. In the spring of 2019, the Hogg Foundation launched the Communities of Care Initiative. This initiative supports collaborative approaches to well-being in the Houston area. The grants bring a population health approach to support community resilience, mental health, and well-being, with a focus on children and youth of color and their families. A total of $11.5 million in funds was awarded to 11 organizations over a 5-year grant term. 10 organizations were awarded $800,000 each to build on an existing community collaborative. The collaboratives consist of key stakeholders from across sectors who are working together to plan and implement activities that address a wide range of community needs. The 11th organization, Prevention Institute, received $3.5 million in funds to provide coordination for the initiative. To put it mildly, we are long overdue for an episode focusing on communities of care, and I could think of no better place to start than with today's guest, Christy Serrano, Houston Regional Director for First 3 Years, a Communities of Care grantee. First 3 Years' mission is to support the social-emotional development of infants and toddlers. Accomplishing this through a combination of building awareness of the critical importance of the first 3 years of life, enhancing the quality of relationships between infants and their caregivers, and advocating for policies that support the healthy development of young children. Christy, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So what have you been up to? And maybe you could tell our listeners what's been going on lately. Just in the life of First 3 Years, your excellent organization.
Oh, thanks so much. I guess the word of the, if not the year, the decade, is flexibility. I feel like since we kicked off 2020, we've had to adapt and revisit and revise. And, you know, I guess in a nutshell, I will share that, you know, First 3 Years is a statewide organization. So we have team members across the state and our major cities. And, you know, we've just had a really great communication system with each other for checking in, for advancing the effort. And so thankfully we had a good system in place before the pandemic to continue our work and have been able to shift quickly. And being from an organization that really elevates the importance of mental health and infant mental health specifically, family well-being, it was an opportunity to really kind of lead in this space for family-friendly workplace and, you know, be really accommodating to our families. Our team is, we're a mix of ages, diverse geographic, diverse ethnicities, diverse family setups, but there are team members that have young children that are in school and in childcare. And so I've been really fortunate to be able to be here and be supported while we do our best to support the families and the professionals in the field during this crazy time.
So I'm sure that our listeners would love to know a little bit more about you and your background. How did you find your way into this work?
So that takes me back a bit into early career. I thought I was going to be one of those ed reformers and went into a graduate program at the University of Chicago that was heavy economics. And many of your listeners are probably familiar with Jim Heckman and his work on the social return on investment for investing in the early years. So I happened to be in an environment that not just made a sound economic case for investing in the early years and considering the family as a place to start and start those investments, you know, being around like-minded folks and around all that research, but also in a city that was really one of the leaders in the country in thinking about how to not just get the philanthropic community behind early childhood and infant mental health, like Irving Harris and his contemporaries. But also it kind of grew and different, both private and corporate philanthropy sort of did that. So I did some policy work initially, and then I actually spent a little time in early childhood philanthropy. And then around 5 years ago, my husband and I decided to move closer to family as we started contemplating starting our own family. And so now I have a 9-month-old and she's wonderful. But I grew up in the Fort Bend County area, and now we live in Harris County. And I am very fortunate that the stars aligned, and the first 3 years was expanding its leadership opportunities in the region, and have been here for about 3 years now.
Okay. So how would you describe the first 3 years' philosophy or mission, and what sets it apart?
So first 3 years' work focuses on building long-term sustainable community solution to advance the mental health and development of infants, toddlers, and their families. And we do this by connecting both parents and professionals working with or on behalf of children birth to three with access to an understanding of the latest research and best practice for supporting early childhood development, especially social emotional development, i.e. infant mental health. So our main areas of work focus on just really being cross-sector, intentionally keeping top of mind that systems intersect, people intersect, and relationships come first. So we work on supporting that early relational health, strength-based caregiver education with also system building efforts within, again, a cross-sector system, specifically really began this work in child welfare and piloting a really innovative program that is around systems building and best practice. And so that's how, you know, that approach sets us apart in a lot of ways, is that we're not really necessarily, we only push one type of curriculum or one type of program. We don't even have curriculum. So, but at the same time, we review and make sure that we're always putting forward the best research and the best practice. And we are the only statewide organization in Texas working to address infant mental health within family serving systems. So we are very broad in our scope, but we're very specific in our mission around infant mental health and not necessarily the whole childhood spectrum.
So your organization existed prior to COVID, obviously. In what ways has your work changed? Either in terms of how you do it or what you do since the pandemic started?
Yeah, I mentioned a little bit when we got started that we had a really great communication remote working model as an organization. So we were really fortunate to be able to respond quickly to COVID and what it meant for not just working together as a team, but also what it meant, the implications for reaching families and our partners, so we could continue making our mark. We have been very fortunate that because we were positioned to kind of go big virtually early on, we've actually been able to impact a large number of professionals than we actually had initially believed we would. And so going virtual, in a sense, helped us actually increase our reach by quite a bit. And we also created more opportunities for partnerships in parts of the state where we don't necessarily have staff present. And so a lot of the silver lining for us with going virtual is just being able to kind of not have those be barriers to reaching folks is this wonderful technology that sometimes is mean to us, but a lot of the time helps us facilitate new relationships. And then internally, we have been able to not just leverage our support, our current budget, but also activate our board members into supporting our team members. So early days, we approved pandemic PTO for staff just to balance work-life, you know, efforts, and then also in support of the professional well-being and mental health. And then we also increased our number of touch points with staff. And so we establish weekly quarantinis where we connect on a weekly basis so that folks feel like they can unplug and just be present. It's much harder to do work with lots of back-to-back expectations because of, you know, that's the new normal, is that we're not necessarily traveling to a home or traveling to a meeting. We're actually just have a lot more space. So the way we work together has changed. We've elevated and highlighted opportunities for work-life balance. And we are, you know, we just continue to strive to be flexible. And as an example, one of the things we did early on was create a virtual guide for home visitation in the child welfare system. So families continued to have to meet court orders to have these visits. And we wanted to make sure that we provided the support to our system partners on how to make those visits as safe as possible. And so we did that early on, especially raising that awareness that it's okay to do, not the best, but it's definitely better to have a virtual visit with a young child and a parent than not at all.
Okay, so how about some personal stories that testify to either the need for the services that you provide or the impact that they're having?
I'll start with a quick personal, side note of, I'm a new mom. I have a 9-month-old, and you know, I was passionate about this work before becoming a mom, but now that I am a mom, it is so real to me, not just a living, breathing baby that is going to be a hopefully thriving, happy, healthy adult with lots of healthy relationships and, you know, success in her own way. And so that makes it very real for me. And it makes me even think about how hard it is to parent, to be a caregiver, and not only in this time, but at any time. And that there needs to be even more resources and support for families who have young children. Being someone that has resources and support, you know, I'm grateful every day and for what I'm able to provide and the space and time I'm able to dedicate to being a parent. But I know that's not reality for, you know, hundreds of thousands of families in this country. So that sort of motivates me every day to continue doing the work beyond sort of what we know the research says is that personal experience of being a new parent and a parent to a baby. But I do want to share a little bit about our early relation health program as an example of our impact. So we started that program a couple of years ago, so it's fairly new. And we're working on enhancing the internal capacity of our partner organizations to offer families the support they need to help strengthen their own relationships with their infant and toddler, which especially in families that face trauma or have their own, you know, everyday challenges of whether meeting basic needs or potentially there's some violence in the home, you know, that is really hard to do. And so we train professionals on how to leverage both screening and messaging tools to promote the relational health among families that they serve. And then because of the pandemic, we had to take a 6-month pause from in-person training and partner recruitment. Again, as I mentioned, we adapted and doing a lot of virtual trainings and have been doing safe distancing practices so that we're able to do some trainings with 2 therapeutic and medical organizations just in the past couple of months. And we'll be recruiting additional partners across the Southeast region. We are very excited from the initial trainings and the initial implementation. And, you know, we've received feedback from different staff that, you know, it seems obvious that we should be thinking about the relationship in our work, but sometimes we just don't have the tools. And so one provider shared that once she kind of put that front and center and thought about, okay, what could be happening here in this session, this clinical session, that I'm maybe missing. And so when she started paying attention to the relationship and gave herself permission to talk to the mom about how things were going and how she was feeling about not just everything in the world, but her feelings with her young child. You know, the mother revealed that she was struggling with some postpartum depression. And that impacted the way not only that this clinical provider interacted with mom, but she was able to actually provide some resources on the spot to help that mother. So just one example of how tuning into that relationship, how asking questions about relationships, even when they don't seem like the kind of relationship, you know, you would have with your best friend or potentially a colleague, you know, relationship with an infant or toddler, is very, you know, it's a reflection on what is happening in that family's life. And so that opportunity to discuss with the family, you know, hey, I feel like there could be something here. Do you want to talk about it? Is actually a wonderful opportunity to provide that extra support to the family beyond that clinical or potentially educational visit.
What are consistently some of the biggest challenges in doing this kind of work? Because it does indeed sound quite challenging.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot, but I think if I were to pick one is the urgency. There's been a lot of work on making the case for the importance of the first 3 or 5 years of life. There's been a lot more recognition and acknowledgement beyond sort of the kind of early education and care field that these years are important. These years are the foundation for all life and learning outcomes. But I think what happens almost every year, especially here in a challenging legislative state, is that the urgency is not what's coming up for folks. If you think about just a baby that was born during COVID, there were many opportunities this past session for funding decisions and for you really kind of putting our values and our budget for supporting that baby. And then the next time maybe a policy or practice will impact that baby will already be 3, almost 4 years old before they may be getting the chance to get impacted because of just how the timing works. We have a 2-year gap and then we have another, you know, potential year or two of implementation. And then that baby misses out on critical investments. So I think year after year and session after session, theme that happens is that, the urgency kind of gets lost, that this is now, we have to do this now because there seems to be so many other competing priorities. And so I think that will be the main takeaway. And I think that the federal government, that's a really good example about how, you know, the urgency is being communicated through a budget and through decision makers saying, no, the time is now to help, you know, struggling families. And a way to do that is by investing in early care and education. It is by increasing the tax credit for the child tax credit and all of these things that we know lift families out of poverty and give children the best chance of life in those first few years. But that I think the general theme is that it gets lost when there are competing issues.
And how diverse is your clientele?
So we actually have 2 kinds of audiences that we reach. And so we, through our Safe Babies program and our Baby Day program, we have kind of our direct target audience, if you will, our parents. And so those services are, I would say primarily, I mean, we reach a very diverse group of families. We have early research that the groups out of the live in-person Baby Day, they tend to be from communities that are more accessible. But then when we went virtually, we learned that we had a much more diverse group of parents that were engaged. There was something that happened with going virtually that wasn't always good for every parent, but it did increase the diversity in our reach. Because I think that with as much trouble as, you know, broadband access is and technology, you know, equity and technology access is, it did provide an opportunity to actually have a more diverse reach for families. Regarding our program partners, we are expanding our geographic and our reach. And so that in of itself sort of brings along not just different kinds of organizations that may not have been traditionally thought of early ed and education partners, but it also has implications for their clientele. And so don't have exact numbers on the diversity, but I think that the pandemic has really helped First 3 years expand our reach in terms of thinking about where are the communities that we don't have a physical presence in that we've learned more about through this virtual world. And so we're shifting our practice and our priorities to be more mindful of how not only are we reaching those families, but how are we communicating? What language are we using? You know, is it a way of communicating to families that is appealing? Is it acceptable? And so revisiting our program areas and our also mission and thinking about all of those things.
I would love for you to talk about your Communities of Care grant from the Hogg Foundation. What have you been able to accomplish through the use of these funds, and what things have you learned about like the space in which you operate?
Like you mentioned, we're part of the Communities of Care initiative with the Hogg Foundation. Our collaborative is in Baytown, which is a city about maybe 20, 30 miles east of Houston. And that collaborative began its work sort of thinking about navigating systems. So helping develop solutions to help families navigate the services and resources within the community that their young child needs. And we've expanded that work to more comprehensively think about the mental health of young children and their families in partnership with different organizations and parents. And so we've been able to do quite a bit that we've been over the past 2 years, and we're now entering the third year of the initiative. We've had consistently high engagement from our community partners. We had developed a community assessment where we engaged over 200 families in different kinds of data collection and design of what will be a future goal and action plan. We learned too that many families confirmed some of the suspicions we had related to what families see as gaps and assets in their community, one of them being access to early care and education, and many being longstanding, but also new issues in, you know, meeting their basic needs and also having space to feel safe and active in their community. So these were really thanks to a framework presented by our partners at Prevention Institute about considering all of the structural drivers in play at the community level that could be affecting mental health and infant mental health. We've also been able to partner with experts in family engagement and race equity. There's a lot of families of Latino origin in Baytown, a lot of Spanish speakers as well. So we wanted to make sure that all of the work we were putting forward and the plans that we were putting together reflected equity and language justice. And so that was work we did early on. We also were able to develop a charter that really also reflected that language justice and shared power and decision-making with community members. So it wasn't just a nonprofit-led initiative, that it actually really tried intentionally to build a governance and decision-making structure that invited and had meaningful space that that required that engagement. And so that charter is, I'm happy to say, one of the first ones that was developed among the initiative and has been borrowed heavily among some of our partners as well. And so part of that charter means having family leadership roles that we're able to pay family leaders for their time. And so they're coming to meetings, they're going to events, they're talking to other families about, you know, what their vision and hope are for their children, their young children. They are being paid for their time, not only in engaging in the collaborative, but also when they're activated and doing things in the community to advance the work of the collaborative, we're also being able to pay them for their time. And that's been really meaningful. And so I think the last thing I'll mention is that we were also able to, in addition to sort of the systems building and collaborative building approach, we also have been pretty nimble in our ability to respond to, you know, crises. So when COVID did happen, we were able to distribute over $15,000 in cash and baby products directly to parents, not just in the wake of COVID, but also right after the winter storm, Uri, earlier this year, which seems like a long time ago. But those, you know, our ability to respond quickly and the kind of family support dollars that we were able to leverage through the Hogg Foundation grant made it possible to do that.
She is Christy Serrano. She is the Houston Regional Director of First 3 Years, doing transformative work, and the Hogg Foundation is proud to call them a grantee and partner. Christy, thank you.
Thank you so much.
This episode is the second of our two-part look at children in 2021. Just last week, we came out with episode 118, a look into the devastation that COVID has been inflicting on children, specifically those who have lost parents or caregivers during the pandemic. Here's a sample.
You know, when kids experience COVID deaths, it was much more difficult than other situations because, one, they didn't get to say goodbye to their loved one. You know, dad contracted COVID, but nobody really knew how bad it was. And the person went to the hospital, or dad or mom went to the hospital and never returned. And there was so much guilt also about, was I the one that gave it to him? Even kids feeling guilty that the whole family got sick, and which one of us gave it to dad or to mom? So a tremendous amount of guilt. A piece to that that it made their grief even more complicated, because this is what we would consider a complicated death, complicated grief, was that no funerals. You know, the person, most of these families, their loved one ended up being cremated, whether they wanted that or not, because that's what they were doing at the funeral home. And it took, in some cases, months to get those ashes back. So there was no service waiting for the ashes. This summer, I see the funeral home just packed daily as I drive by, because some of those families are barely having those services. So, and those families that were able to, you know, what was the limit? 10, you know, at our funeral homes. And they said, the kids said, you know, I missed my family being there, or my friends, or I wasn't able to have my extended family. And then you take that even a step further. The funeral's over, everybody goes home, and nobody can come by and give support to the family, compounding their grief even more so.
The voice that you just heard was Laura Olage, Executive Director of the Children's Grief Center of El Paso. It's a wonderful conversation, and you should check it out. I've included a link in the show description. And that does it for this episode. We're glad you could join us. If you have comments or anything that you would like to share about the podcast, feel free to reach out to us at intothefold@austin.utexas.edu. Thoughtful comments will be acknowledged during a future episode. Production assistance by Veronica Rodriguez and Anna Harris. And as always, thanks to the Hogg Foundation for its support. Just as taking care of ourselves enhances our ability to help others, so it is as well that by helping others, we enhance our own resilience. Please leave us a review and subscribe to us on the podcast app of your choice. You can find us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or TuneIn. Thanks for joining us.